Back with Monitor, and with me is a gentleman known professionally and otherwise as Long John Nebel. Nebel, by the way, means fog in German. His profession is radio telephone talk show. He has such a show, which is on WNBC in New York and heard in many eastern states. It's phenomenally successful. Any idea, John? No, Fred, here, I'm supposed to ask you for some reason how many listeners you have on a given night. But before that, to give people an idea of who really started talking in radio, how much time do you talk a week on the air?
I guess about 37, 38 hours a week.
Ready, folks? Would you believe 37, 38 hours a week? And it's true. You started doing a nighttime show, I think. Originally, didn't you, on radio?
No, actually, I did a short show that was heard from 5 to 5:30 on 630 stations. That's what they told me when they signed me up, and I found 23 were using it on the air. And I received a letter one day after about 2 weeks from Portage, Wisconsin. I showed it to everybody. It was the only letter I ever got at that time. And it was called the Charlie and John Show. The people in the control room certainly know the Charlie part, Charlie Holmes. And it was one of the most hilarious shows that ever hit a network, Charlie told me. And at the end of 13 weeks, I was back running an auction in Parsippany, New Jersey.
It might interest you to know that as background for this, John was once a street pitchman, oiling up the tonsils. And, of course, I remember you first. I never heard the Charlie and John show. I was a deprived child.
You're fortunate.
I remember when you started at midnight.
Yes.
Working from midnight till 5:30 in the morning.
That's
which
right.
You're still doing.
Yes, I'm still doing that. I haven't advanced.
It's a very funny dark rut.
Yes, it is.
You're in there. All right, now, how many people do you think do hear you at night?
I don't have the slightest idea. I know my wife was listening last week one night.
John has this terrible streak of modesty that comes over him sometimes and refers to his audience as my 8 listeners.
That's right.
And switchboards have been known to blow up from people calling at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
For whatever was bothering them.
Such as get off the air and things like that.
Yes, it's a cross-section.
Comments, right.
All righty. What do you think makes... Now, originally people used to say those late-night talk shows were successful because people were lonesome. Or they didn't have much of a choice of what to listen to. And today, the word phenomenal is a good word. They're phenomenally successful. Why is that?
Well, I think possibly one of the first talk shows, as far as an all-night talk show, is the one that I did on another station a number of years ago, from midnight to 5 o'clock in the morning. Of course, Barry Gray and Jack Eigen had been around and still are very successful. But they sent me out to the transmitter of a local station in New York back on August 17th of 1956. They had fired the other man at 2 o'clock in the morning, who incidentally is still working for him. They rehired him again. And I sat out there in the chief engineer's office. And I used to, you know, just sit out there and talk. I don't know what I said. Once in a while I would take a phone call. In those days we didn't have the delay system that we have today. And one night after about 2 weeks or so, Jackie Gleason called up. And I guess he was awake, and I don't know if anybody else happened to be listening. He decided to come out with some corned beef sandwiches, because at that time we used to chip in a dime apiece, everyone, to have the facilities of the refrigerator in the kitchen that was built at the transmitter. This meant that you might find a lemon, partially squeezed, piece of onion or something like that.
And some lettuce with a little rust on it.
This is about the size of it.
So he came out. I have the same stuff at home now.
I've never had the pleasure of going to your estate, but I'm quite aware. People have told me that have been there. But we
started an all-night. I never had guests at 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
No, but I've been available at 5 in the morning. In fact, when you used to do a TV show, sometimes we on a Monday night, we would go over to one of the delicatessens or one of the places nearby, and we would sit and talk till 4 or 5 in the morning. You don't remember that?
Well, yes, I remember that, but it's hardly the same as an invitation to what you so kindly refer to as my estate.
Hmm.
Well, one room is, of course. The other room is not much of an estate. It's the bedroom.
You know, do you know how we happened to meet? Not that this is a great thing. One time you were complaining about this fellow who said, all of my listeners. Remember that?
No.
And you said something about the news, and it was brought to my attention. You said that I used to pick up things off the floor and read the news. Remember that?
Oh, yeah. You're still doing that, aren't you?
No, I don't read the news because these people here at NBC, they're pretty bright. They've heard me read it at another station, you know, and they know that I can't time it, and half the words I can't pronounce, so they're quite bright. They never let me read the
news. What amazes me, John, is after all the years you've been doing this stuff, and during a great part of the time, you've been listening to people, and you still play very naive and uninformed. You're probably the most informed man outside of Brad Crandall in New York City. I have to say that he's listening.
No, I don't think so. I think, look, no matter what you do, you're going to learn something. You've learned something, haven't you?
That's what I keep telling them.
No, I think that I've been very fortunate to be around. You know, I've been on the air about 20,000 hours.
You should keep your seatbelt fastened.
That's right. That's a lot of time sitting around talking with people, and I think I've been fortunate. I guess I've acquired a little knowledge, not too much.
Are you getting to like it?
Yeah, I must admit that I'm a very happy guy at my age to be doing something that I enjoy, doing a talk show. I would be frightened if somebody asked me to, be a master of ceremonies or something like that, which I did years ago when I used to be a huffer and I played banjo in a band for a while and did a lot of things, had a medicine show on the road.
Pardon me.
But now it's a wonderful feeling to be able to come in, although I do 3 shows a day here on the local radio station here, it's a wonderful feeling to be able to come in at 12 midnight and have absolutely no knowledge of what I'm going to talk about, and don't come back and say you've heard it, you know that I'm not misrepresenting, and to sit and ask a guy questions, and he's there. It could be Melvin Belli, it could be Percy Forman, it could be some great ophthalmologist or an otorhinolaryngologist or whatever it may be, and the guy will sit there for 5 hours and I can ask him questions. I'm really happy about it. Very.
Ah, John, we got to talk some more about this. We have to take a break for a minute or so, and then we'll have a progress report on Gemini 9. So we'll stand by together on the monitor beacon. For the latest on the flight of Gemini 9, we switch to NBC News at Cape Kennedy.
This is Robert Abernethy. Astronauts Thomas Stafford and Eugene Cernan are well into their 10-hour sleep period now. Cernan apparently sleeping better than Stafford. Here's the latest from Mission Control.
The spacecraft is powered down for the crew's 10-hour sleep period, which will not end until 44 hours and 30 minutes elapsed time. That's 4:10 a.m. Central Standard Time. The flight surgeon reports that the data he's receiving from the tracking stations indicate that Gene Cernan is powered down pretty well, too, but that Tom Stafford appears to rouse once in a while.
It's common in Gemini missions for the command pilot to have a more difficult time sleeping than the pilot. Apparently, he feels a greater responsibility for the flight shape for Cernan's spacewalk tomorrow. Today, that walk had to be postponed because the astronauts were just too tired to attempt it. But they had the good judgment to say they were bushed, and ground officials adjusted the flight plan. No one at Mission Control has suggested any criticism or disappointment about the postponement of Cernan's walk. Far from it. Astronaut physician Charles Berry said, "It's a red-letter day when you can get a test pilot to admit he's tired." This is Robert Abernathy, NBC News, Cape Kennedy.
Reports on the Gemini mission will continue throughout the day and evening. Tomorrow, on Monitor, coverage of the walk in space beginning at 11 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time on NBC Radio. Well, they don't fix it. Just go onward, boy. We're talking with Long John Neville, who didn't do a thing. I mixed myself up. John is one of the country's most successful moderators, commentators, talkitions. What are you?
No, I don't think that I'm
talkitions are where Jessica Mitford made up.
No, I think that I'm a fella who just sits around and asks questions, and I'm very opinionated, and I participate in my own show, so therefore I would not be considered to be a competent moderator because I'm not impartial by any means.
Hmm. So you know, well, you're a John, that's what you are.
That's right.
A Neville, an original.
Did you like Jessica Mitford's article?
Well, it didn't seem to say very much.
Rapped a lot. She rapped, I think, a number of shows around the country.
Well,
I'm happy about them.
She is a paid rapper, isn't she?
Hmm.
Yeah.
Rapped the funeral industry and rapped. I don't know if there's any connection between my show and the funeral industry, but that's another thing. We'll do that later.
Didn't you tell me there was a remote connection that once talking to Jessica, who was on your show about 35 times, that you were talking about funerals, and you said to Jessica, why don't you do a book on it?
No, it wasn't quite that way. Actually, we had a coffee break of about 15 or 20 minutes, and during that time, we would play a tape that I did earlier in the day. And Jessica had heard me announce that on Saturday night, we're going to be talking about the American funeral with Dr. Leroy Bowman at that time. He was a professor at Brooklyn College. And she said, how can you talk about the funeral business? And I said, it's a very interesting book, and I told her something about it, and she became somewhat interested, and then she had an assignment from Saturday Evening Post when she went back to the coast to do a story about the funeral industry on the West Coast.
Hmm.
And that's how it all
came. John, what kind of subject seems to be most interesting to your audience?
I think that there are two subjects that seem to be very interesting today. One is medicine and the other is politics. When I first started in the business, I was very fortunate. More Martians and Venusians were landing on this planet at that time, and I seemed to have the X on them, such as the mystical tonsorial artist from Brooklyn and the fella who went into a dining area on the highway, a rather luxurious place, and he was served champagne, and out of the champagne glass came a magnificent little 3-inch blonde that danced and appeared on the table and all. This was Orfeo Angelucci, and of course since then Angelucci has been to Mars and to Venus. In fact, I received a letter from him last Thursday. I think he is back again. He's on the West Coast, and I hope if he comes to New York he'll join me.
Do you happen to remember the kind of champagne he was drinking at the time?
He hadn't had anything to drink.
The original.
I don't.
Yes,
really,
because
no.
I would certainly like to.
You'd like to get a case.
Serve some of that stuff. Most of the people I know are too tall.
Mm.
I'd like to spend some time with some 3-inchers. Now, you were talking before to me about this show, Monitor.
Yes.
And you said that I sounded more like an announcer here than as myself, didn't you?
Well, there's something about Henry Morgan that I think is unique, and I don't hear Henry Morgan except during the course of an interview, and I have had the opportunity of being on the air with you on TV and on radio many, many times on your shows, and you've been very kind to join me on some of the efforts that I have had in broadcasting. And I would like to hear, and this means my final appearance on Monitor. I'll sign the release and it's all over, so don't worry about it. But I think there should be a 15 or 20 minute Henry Morgan bit on Monitor, where you do just about anything that you desire.
You think so?
I really do, yes.
Let me tell you something. They put in years of work and millions of dollars to develop these programs to have a format.
Well, I'm not changing the format.
I am here.
Now, first of all, I am here as a guest. There is nothing that's prepared. Our listeners know that by now. There's absolutely nothing prepared, except you know that for X amount of minutes, you are going to be talking with me, right?
Sure.
So, supposing they decided to say, Henry, next Saturday, do 17 and a half minutes.
By myself?
That's right. Fill it.
You're crazy. I'd have to stay home 2 weeks to write it.
Henry, I have heard you come in. I have heard you do shows where you didn't even know what was going to happen, except that you knew you went on at 12 o'clock. I remember when you were doing TV, I'm not talking about any of the panel shows, but when you would go on to another station in New York here, and I used to be up there too, and you'd walk right in. I must admit you didn't get there too early, you know what I mean? But you were there just about in time, like about 15 seconds before airtime. And you sat down, and I know, and don't kid me, I know that you hadn't the slightest idea of what you were going to say except hello.
Those were different days, John. And there was a different aura, a different atmosphere, and a different objective. On a show like this, I know if I came in cold, there are about 60 or 70 things on this show that have to be done.
That's right. That I understand. But I think you would. I think if you did I don't know what the amount of time, 8 or 10 minutes of Henry Margaret.
I wish you'd stop this because I'm going to hear from the office tomorrow, and they say, that's a good idea. Go ahead and throw in a few thousand funny remarks, and then the argument will start, is it Monitor or is it the Henry Morgan Show? I prefer to do Monitor.
Mm-hmm.
Really? Because I'm aging. There's a place for this and a place for that. And here, we sometimes throw in a few jokes that the writer gives me. And Miss Faulkner sits around and thinks up funny stuff, and then I change it. I ruin it.
Uh-huh.
And we both go home in tears. And there isn't much place for that. We have news on the hour, for example. Now, that's has to be. That there's an audience for that. They're waiting
that.
For that. They mm-hmm. listen for it.
Yes.
There are cut-ins of news from wherever the news is.
Right.
Like now we're doing Gemini, unfortunately, or fortunately, whichever newsy. But we're ready, or NBC's ready. Now, you can't expect a network to have a news bureau down at Cape Kennedy. And they're waiting around till Henry Morgan get through fooling to do a Gemini 9 report, you know? And I'm pleased with that arrangement.
Henry, you're putting me on the spot. What am I selling, Morgan?
Happens to be your interview. I don't know how I cleverly managed to switch it around. Huh. Oh, the long...
But I haven't got the script. You have the script, so you must have worked a tremendous amount of time to prepare this because the questions are exciting.
All right, here's an exciting question. One night a lady called you...
Yes.
...and she threatened to commit suicide.
Yes.
What happened?
Well, I do a show from 7:45 to 8 at night, a phone show, and we receive calls. About 3 or 4 days prior to that, the same lady had called about 3 o'clock in the morning. I had at that time, if I'm not mistaken, George Fraser on, who is a Boston columnist. And we were talking, and the woman called me, and she said, did you ever think about suicide, Mr. Neville? And I said, yes. And my next question is, have you ever thought about it? I was a little skeptical. She said yes, but she said, I have thought about it numerous times, but she said, I always chicken out. I said, well, if you ever run into the problem again, call me. At least talk to me for a few moments first. So that was the end of the conversation. We took other calls. The next thing is, about 3 days later, she called me on the phone. She said, do you remember me, the lady who chickened out? And I realized that we're possibly in trouble. And one thing led on to another, and I wrote a note to my director, who was extremely competent. He got in touch with the police department. They traced the call and all, and I don't know whether the lady would have committed suicide or not, but at least she didn't. And that's part of the article that Jessica Mitford wrote.
Of course, I think people should know that as a generalization, when you say People who talk about suicide aren't going to commit it. It's not true.
No, this is untrue.
Yeah.
All of the, not all, but most psychologists and psychiatrists disagree with that. If they talk about it, there is a great chance that they are thinking about it and may.
Well, the point here is, of course, friends, that Long John, one of the great talkers of our time, and in all the meanings of the word great, he is even hot stuff. I'd go that far.
Thank you.
And John, it's been a pleasure. Thanks so much for coming by. That's Long John Nubble of station WNBC in New York, who conducts a conversation program, or programs, which are enormously popular in New York and elsewhere in the East. Now, this is Henry Morgan. Thank you very much for joining us tonight on Monitor. In Northern Ohio, you've been listening on WKYC Cleveland. See you Saturday next.
Continuing coverage of the flight of Gemini 9 on the NBC Radio Network.